Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Cloud Architects Podcast. I'm super excited because this is the first time since, and I looked it up, it was like episode 43.
That's right.
I think it was like March of 2020. It was the last time we actually recorded in a room with actual people. So we've been very much online since then. So super excited to be back with my co-host, Nicholas Blank.
Hi, Chris. Honestly, it's been... It's freaking cold because we're in Seattle, and it's really cold for me because I come from a warm place, and we flew 30 something hours to get here to scratch and sniff actual human beings, and some of those human beings we're about to introduce. So let me say hello both to Mark and to Tarek and ask you to please introduce yourselves and do the responsible adult introduction and tell our listeners who you are and what you do.
Thank you, Nicholas. Hi, everyone. My name is Tarek Dawood. I am a lead architect in the customer engineering team of the Microsoft's identity division. So we're a team within the identity engineering team that works directly with customers, enterprise customers, Fortune 500 customers, helping deploy identity stuff. And then we learn from that and we come back and bring the insights back to engineering. And as well as architecture team specifically, my team focuses on writing like white papers, solution architecture, designing workshops, that kind of stuff to help kind of scale the team's knowledge and excellence to the broader ecosystem. And I might have a few links for you at the end for reference. So that's my role.
Hi, folks. I am Mark Morzinski. I'm a principal product manager on the same team as Tarek in the customer experience team. And I work with some of those customers he mentioned on their deployments and bring the feedback back to the team.
The last time we spoke together was in May of 2019, I believe it was. And that was actually one of our very successful episodes because the knowledge that the two of you shared is still timeliest today, because we spoke about bad things that people use like passwords and what they shouldn't be doing. And a lot of that guidance is still super relevant today. So we don't necessarily want to rehash everything that we talked about on that show, but let's just hear from you around what it is that you care about our customers hearing and what they should and should not be doing.
I can start. I think from my side of the world, I work a lot with the space of passwordless. That's actually one of the areas that I focus on working with engineering on deploying passwordless across all the different passwordless credentials. We'll talk about them in a second. And then I also focus on end-to-end deployment of security, which is zero trust. I think you and I collaborated on that.
Yeah.
And so I think the good news is we're seeing good motion on both sides, right? So there were customers in an EBC in 2020 who'd be like, I'm not convinced with zero trust. What is zero trust? I don't believe in zero trust. It's a marketing fad. It's a word.
That's right.
Nobody asks that today. You go to an EBC today where it's like, I'm in. I'm all in. You know, those, skip those slides about why zero trust. I don't know, but how?
Yes.
Where?
Yes. How?
Where do I start? How far do I go? How do I measure where I've gone? So I think that's a good thing overall. The modernized, in my mind, zero trust is just adopting a modern security posture, right? And not the old paradigm of, you know, the moat and the wall and the crocodiles and everything inside the fort. Nothing is in any fort. Everything is
everywhere now. Crocodiles are just running wild everywhere, exactly. Right? Yeah.
And then, so the good news, I think, is people understand. I think, like, I personally work with 5 customers. 4 of them literally this year have a funded IT project called Zero Trust Money. Literally, like, this is done, right? Because still a lot to go, and even within their own journeys, right? Then on the passwordless front, the good news is obviously, same thing. It used to be avant-garde, the super cool, trendy customers who were looking into passwordless and all this stuff. Looking at our numbers, for example, all passwordless methods. So at various degrees of adoption, right?
Yeah.
All passwordless methods this year doubled in usage.
Wow.
Between Windows Server Business, FIDO keys, phone signing. Obviously, each of them is high, you know, varying degree of success. But that was just in 1 year, compared to all their history from when we had the podcast,
that's right.
You know, we're doing public preview until now. They accumulated certain amounts and numbers, and the whole numbers doubled this year. So clearly, you know, the ecosystem is pivoting. But as I think Mark will be the harbinger of doing a little bit, is that there's still a whole lot of passwords happening out there, and there's still a lot to go. And even for the passwordless world, it's about how do we help a user stay passwordless all the time rather than, oh, I'm predominantly paid, but I still have to fall back for this, you know, tax app or this one benefits thing.
Right.
There's still work to do there. But that's kind of, those are two top of mind things from Zero Trust and Password.
I think for me, I spend a lot of time lately on making sure people are using the features that they have available to them, specifically around the risk-based conditional access and anything really around conditional access.
Mm-hmm.
People are very surprised to find like the risk events are actually flagging things in their environment that they're not even looking at or aware of. And then they, you know, they start the incident response process. We do some cleanup and then we go ahead and actually turn on these policies so we get some of the automation that's built in, right? So we can automatically prompt people, they get challenged, they complete the challenge, or we block the user, or we can even do like a, you know, reset the risk of that user. So lots of stuff we can do there, but also just digging into like just core conditional access stuff. Lots of customers have maybe set up their CA policies 3, 4, 5 years ago, and there's lots of new features and functionality that they probably can be turning on to kind of, to Tarek's point, one of the things that we talk a lot about is the authentication strengths, right? So it's good that they've registered for the credentials and the password credentials and they're using them sometimes, but now you can say, hey, in order to get to this resource, you have to come from a phishing-resistant credential.
Yeah.
And getting buy-in from the leadership team to say like, look, this is a very sensitive app, or maybe it's a payroll app or something like that. When you have those authentication strengths turned on in conditional access, that brings a lot of other apps into the fold because now, oh, everyone's using the HR app.
Yeah.
So now we can actually start to enforce that across multiple applications and things like that.
That's really interesting. And I love that sort of the strength, because something that I like to implement with customers is for administrators, right? Because that's kind of how you go on that next step of the journey, right? We've helped folks implement MFA. And back in the day, it was, well, if you're an admin, you're going to MFA. And now we, hopefully everyone, and I saw some stats a couple of weeks ago, which were not very promising, but let's just assume everyone listening to this show has already got MFA going. It's a nice next step in that maturity to say, if you've got a privileged role, you need a phish-resistant credential, right? Something like that. And I love that in conditional access. And what's great, and you mentioned, is there's always something new. Whenever you go in there, there's a new feature, there's a new option, there's a new thing that you can do, which I think is pretty cool as well. So don't sit and forget conditional access, folks, is the message as well.
Very true. I think a lot of my customers are still struggling with how do we get past phish and go to phish resistant? And there's, if I may say, there's been some trust lost because we told people everyone needs to MFA, and then it's like, my MFA got phished. And now I stopped trusting the thing.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about your video?
Sure, but I think it's, I do want to say that, yes, I think it is disturbing when you find that either MFA and got phished or compromised in general, right? But the numbers still show like 95% of password compromises get stopped by MFA. So that you still, and in the, you know, in the general colloquial security game, right, you're not trying to run faster than the bear.
Yeah.
You're trying to run faster than the guy next to you, not the bear, right? And so in this context, you are basically, yes, by moving to MFA, you just leapfrog the folks on the password still, right? So that's, he has the numbers, I think 70% of users are still with just password. You're now moving to the 30% bucket. True, the bad guys know how to also attack, especially the ones who are dedicated and so forth. So this is where I think he referred to the video, like this is where he moves to phishing resistant, and phishing resistant is not just hype, it is literally mathematically, cryptographically phishing resistant. You can't, there's nothing on your channel that you can steal that you can play back on his channel. So you just show up as him in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
And that's why it's mathematically strong. But yes, it is about the goalposts move as well, the attackers move as well. I think when we did the MDDR, the Microsoft Digital Defense Report, aka that MS-MDDR for your audience, right? They publish it every year. In 2020, the number one attack surface on Entra, this is just watching, you know, all the bad guys hammering away at us, right?
Mm-hmm.
The number one attack was breach replay, right? I'm breaking to, I don't know, the New York Times.
New York Times. It's usually like you've used the same password at some local, like...
Yeah.
My mom used the same password at her, the local pizza place, right, to order the pizza, right? So that's the one that gets compromised, and then they take that across.
Exactly. So they breach some other website. There's not Entra. And then you replay the breach against us, right?
Or they're buying breach credential lists from somewhere, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wherever they came from, the likelihood that you signed up with the same email address and the same password is very high, right? That's what they're betting on, right?
Right.
And then the number two one attack vector was password spray, which is, okay, I don't care about breach. I'm just going to have a dictionary of famous, world famous passwords, right? And I'll just run it against Entra across the board, right? Number three was phishing. In 2 years, phishing is number one by far, like 90%. It works. Because obviously there are fundamental problems with passwords and relying on human cognition, and even OTP. This is why the world is moving to phishing resistant. I mean, the whole FIDO Alliance was founded more than a decade ago, right? Because they recognized that a long time ago that people are going to try and do that. But I think, yes, on the one hand, I think the credentials were not mature enough for someone in 2017 to tell you to move to phishing resistance. Right, so you would have had a very hard time to get all your users to use a YubiKey, for example.
Yes.
So against everything, not just us, right? In all scenarios, unlock the OS, do this, do that, or mobile, all that stuff. Now the ecosystem is much, much healthier, much better, right? With passkeys, and we'll talk about that a bit. And on the other hand, it was worth it to move to MFA. I mean, you still leapfrog, you know, 90% of the back end.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a quote that's attributed to Bruce Schneier, but he said he got it from the NSA, which is attacks always get better, they never get worse. And, you know, security controls like decay, right? Like you have to constantly...
The same control, down in value.
Yeah, you have to keep constantly improving it, right? So yeah, at the time, that was probably enough, but as attacks have gotten better, you need to continue to improve your security posture. So I get where they're coming from, but like... That's just how it works, right? Like it's working, so they're going to.
I mean, that point is so valid because there was a time where passwords by themselves, password username, password pair was sufficient, right?
Yes.
So you know we have to keep moving forward as the threats keep maturing as well, right? So that makes absolute sense. You mentioned YubiKeys and you know we're talking about phish resistant. For folks who are not familiar with that concept, can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly is phishing resistant? How do we implement that if we wanted to implement it? Do I have to go buy a YubiKey-like thing, or are there other sort of mechanisms for us?
Ah, great question. So, yeah, the magic formula for password lists that we've been pursuing over the last several years, right, is to provide people with strong phishing resistant credentials everywhere they are. Basically, give them a variety of options, and the options are not competing; they're complementary. So, when we went live back in we had the public preview 2019 when we met, and then 2021 is GA, right? The story was Windows Hello for Business for your dedicated Windows device.
That's right.
Right? And it's still the best thing. That has not changed since then. And it's by far the furthest credential by an order of magnitude of everything else. And we'll get to what that proves in a second. And then on your mobile, our story was passwordless phone signing. Passwordless phone signing is not mathematically phishing resistant as it was implemented at the time.
Okay.
We're doing work to improve this actually very soon. We'll talk about that. And then the third was the FIDO2 security keys, okay? On a Windows device, for example, you can only set up to 5 to 10 Windows Hello for Business profiles. So if you had a kiosk, Windows Hello doesn't work. FIDO works really well, right? Administrators, secure admin workstations, that solves machines, palm machines, right? Those things. FIDO keys are really, really good, right? But for the masses, people at home, whatever, they're not going to carry a FIDO key to plug into their mobile to get into the app.
That's right.
It's going to be like not a good experience. You're going to get a ton of help desk calls, right? So the ecosystem in general has evolved to a place where, you know, where Windows Hello was a pioneer back in 2015 when it first came out, and 2017 when officially we were pushing for it, and then 2019 passwordless stuff, is your own computing device having the phishing-resistant credential, right? The same exact kind of underlying protocol is being used in all of them, right? I'm taking out my beautiful YubiKey to show everybody here, right? So both of them have the same concept, right? Which is what? What was the original phishing resistant credential? Anybody know? Before all these modern fancy things, that just
cert
certificates, exactly. Yes. Smart cards, yeah, yep. Right? Yep. The OG. And phishing resistant, basically it is PKI, right? And the private key is on the smart card and it's not going to leave. And when you put in your PIN, you release the private key to simply sign or do something to the operation being requested to return the response, and nothing can be phished from that transaction.
Okay,
it's beautiful, right? Why do smart cards, I mean, you're all deployment experts, why do smart cards not, why are we all not using smart cards today?
Well, they're a pain to use.
There you go. So, ding, 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 right? The pain to deploy, right? We used to joke in the customer onsite with our customers, like, for the 10 of you who have successfully deployed CVs, right. For the rest of us, we need this, right? We need something. So that was the whole point. The evolution, the amazing evolution, the Fido Lens, right, is that this thing has the same infrastructure, has a PKI infrastructure. It's able to generate private keys, just a tiny little chip over here. Given a little bit of juice of power, it can generate a private public key pair, keep the private key in its storage, and generate the public key, give it to the IDP if needed for registration. And then afterwards, when you send it a challenge, it signs it, sends it back to you, very beautifully silent, right? What Windows Hello did is it put that technology on your main computing device. You don't have to carry a key to do phishing resistance. You can use a TPM chip on your thing, and the secure element, right? So, and then Apple and Google with the work for passkeys, the great work they did for passkeys, right? Same, basically the same idea. Okay, let's just bring it to the masses. So the great things happening here is that now the masses are having every computing device has in it right now a chip that basically is able to do, you know, obviously the TPM chip is able to do private public key pair, sign stuff with it securely. And this is kind of how we're able to get here now. Mm. And that's what phishing resistance is about at the end of the day, is that yes, cryptographic sound doesn't need a device, and then the bigger play is going to be that these credentials get you there. And of course, these will always be available in viable and
important. And even that, like the ecosystem around those keys, it's gone crazy how, like, in the part, I mean, YubiKey really has been around since the very beginning, but there's so many other vendors doing them now, right? So it's actually, you don't have to just buy a YubiKey. You've got a choice of...
Tellus.
Yeah.
For the Tellus, I'm going to upset it.
Yeah. You have a form factor now. I've seen those in all sorts of form factors as well.
Biometrics.
Yeah, makes sense. So
I'd like to point my shaking finger at the two of you and say, this was all lovely, but attacker in the middle attacks. Mm-hmm. So I've secured everything, but then somebody steals my cookie, my token, my auth session, and everything I've worked so hard to implement is now worthless because I got compromised.
True. So back to the bear again, right?
Yeah.
Right. So if you move to phishing resistant, right, now you've leapfrogged even the people with MFA, right? So now your goalposts are over here, everybody else's goalposts are here. There is the, you know, dinky little attacker in the basement in Cairo, where I come from, for example, right? Who was just, you know, hacking, trying to, you know, get someone, phish someone for their email to get in, to get to, you know, quickly get in to order a piece of fancy hardware or something off Amazon, whatever, ship it. And then by the time you figure out and cancel the credit card, they got the whatever, and then sold it for, you know, free $500.
A young target has made a nice
profit. And that's what you win by shutting down phishing, right? But then there's going to be the more sophisticated attackers, and there's going to be the state actors and so on. And of course, you have to keep, as you know, you have to keep moving the defense line. You can't stay where you were. So yes, I think the whole ecosystem recognizes that as soon as Tariq has his way and successfully deploys passwordless all over the world, and phishing-resistant passwordless soon, might I add, right? That they're going to go after the sessions, right? They're going to go after the artifacts of the session, whether it's sessions or tokens or refresh tokens or access tokens. And the next evolution that is happening is obviously a lot of investments around token binding the token to the device as you can. There is some protocols work being done with Depop. In the intra ecosystem, Microsoft ecosystem, we have something called token protection we shipped recently as part of conditional access, actually, where you can specifically bind the sessions of certain first party workloads, so Exchange and SharePoint, to where they can be bound to the device. So that's definitely being worked on, because everybody sees the writings on the wall, right?
Yes.
And we're all going to beautifully have faster, you know, phishing and
yeah.
And then we're all going to steal the set of that. So malware will become the biggest problem.
And malware is free, yeah. Right? Or super low.
Because it's beam the secret, beautiful sessions from the good device to the bad device, right?
Yeah. And one of my customers, he gave me this beautiful quote that said, my attacker's investment requirement is zero, because attacker tools are free. You can go to GitHub and you can find tools for everything. So I don't need to be nation state to steal a token anymore. I can, with very minimal, you know, we're talking like in the $2 range, buy malware that'll take something off your device. Phishing is still the quickest way of getting it there. Or, you know, some way I've got to deploy it on there, but now it's there. And I haven't spent a lot of money. And recently, we've also seen a slightly more complex attack where we move away from the identity to what the identity can do when we start talking about application identity.
Mean.
So with that, we now have a whole landscape which is, if I may say, in no man's land.
Yeah.
It doesn't belong to the dev. It doesn't belong to the identity administrator. Both say it's you because this is an apps thing. No, it's not. It's an identity thing. And we have customers who've got things deployed in the intra-ID tenants that are just stagnating with rights and permissions and API permissions, overly permissioned apps. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts and what you'd like to see happen.
Let me start and then you can jump in. But okay, so a few things. If you didn't quite get Tarek's explanation of why it's phish resistant, he's very passionate about this, so passionate that he learned how to draw with his left hand on a piece of glass to show how does the phish resistant work. So check out that video.
It is a light beam.
Yeah, it's one of those cool light board videos where he did that. So he definitely covers that.
ak.ms/phishing-resistant-explained, and I'll give you
So that's a good one. Okay, so back to your customer's point of view on that. So I understand where they're coming from. However, I think that's like a failed mindset of as a defender of like, oh, well, what am I supposed to do? The people can just download from GitHub. Yes, they can. But what can you do as defenders? Like, this is your environment. So I would ask your customer, what are they doing from the device perspective? Do you have application allow listing? So only the applications you want can run. Okay. Are they looking for any, those are all, some of the things that people fall into is I'm looking for protective controls. What are the detective controls that they're running, right? So let's say an attacker somehow gets malware on your device and tries to run it and it doesn't work because people don't have the right permissions and it throws an error in the event log. Is anyone in their SOC taking a look for that and then immediately jumping on that, right? So I think there's lots of stuff that they can do before it's just like, oh, well, they stole the token on my device. What am I going to do? Like, what with me? There's lots you can do, right? This is your environment. You can be protecting for this. You can be restricting those permissions. You can be looking for that stuff. So to think of an attacker as going to somehow like tiptoe every single way through, right? Every time they do anything that they're leaving evidence, right? So you'd be looking for that type of detective controls and sucking that in and then taking action on that. So that's what I would kind of point them towards that. Okay. The question was more about app permissions and things like that. That's a whole other different animal. We have some scripts that will help you look for overprivileged app permissions, but you're basically talking about governance at the end of the day. And yep. I can tell you it's worse than just your apps. Like we have another feature or product which is called Microsoft Entra Permissions Management, which is in the KIM space. I've been spending a lot of time in that. I can tell you just users' permissions in their different cloud resources are way, way, way over permission. People just
have cloud infrastructure.
Entitlement management.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we gave that person owner rights. That's true. We don't know what they want, right? So you're basically talking about like, what do we do for governance? Like that's really the root question of like, how do we do governance to make sure the right people have the right permissions at the right time? So from an app perspective, there's lots of stuff we can kind of talk about that. But I think at a basic thing is like, don't be granting overprivileged app permissions. Make sure you have the right application consent turned on. And we have there's Defender for Cloud Apps will help you with this. We also have some scripts available that will just dump the permissions. You can take a look at those to see, hey, who has granted what permissions to what? And how do you pull some of that stuff down? We did a talk many years ago called Hiding in the Clouds. And it's basically that, like, this is how app consent works. These are app permissions works. Here's how you find it. Here are some of the permissions that are really over permissioned and dangerous you want to kind of restrict for. But what do you think from a modernization plan?
Yeah, I think on the plus one on the devices part, like Entra is just the beginning, like the filling room. But you have to also, like, if you have Intune, then you have the posture of the device. And if you have the MDE, for example, Defender for Endpoint for our side, then you are watching for the anomalous things happening. The difference between the two products, like one is management and the other one is more like, input security. But on the application stuff, there's a lot you can do and there's a lot left to do both. And actually, there's some goodness coming from our side. So I'll separate the two problems, DevOps, developers and how to secure them and govern them and so on, which I think EPM, Entra Permissions Management, ties to that. I think the other one is just workloads. I've got these robots, these worker bees running around, touching stuff, doing stuff, I have no idea. I think there's stuff also you can do there. And of course, the two tie in together because you want to teach your DevOps to use the best ways to manage those things, right? So on the developer side, let's start with the developer side. Yes, definitely review their permissions in Entra, review their permissions in infrastructure. This is what EPM allows you to do, is to see, oh, this person is a contributor to 5,000 subscriptions. That if he ever gets owned, we are owned. He's not just him by himself, right? And it's permission creep, as it's called actually in the product, is basically when you start on, project A, and you're done, and you move to Project B, and you still have all the permissions for Project A. So you just keep accumulating, you know, permissions. Well, it's like happened in Active Directory with security group membership. It's just growing and growing, right? And this gives you a lens into, hey, this person has all this permission. It also gives you a lens into, he's using only a fraction of them. Do you want to take over the other one? That kind of stuff.
Right? And one point to add to that, and I think kind of to your point, like, oh, we start with the admins. These people might have more permissions to more sensitive stuff. Like, oh, this is our main revenue generating app. Like you said, if this person gets owned, our entire environment is owned. Like, yeah, they maybe don't own the directory, but they could just take your app offline. Like, oh, now the revenue source has stopped. Like, and that's not as obvious because it's not an administrative role in the directory. Like, but they could have tremendous amount of permissions and just as damaging to the business.
And so, like, we have a whole work stream, actually with Brenda Carter, right, on ZT for developers. Like, basically, give them saw machines, for example. I know, as grumpy as they will get, but don't let them read their email and watch Netflix on the same machine that access to production.
Yes.
As annoying as it may be about that.
You're treating developers like administrators on privileged work stations.
Yeah, like responsible adults, right? Like, yes. Right?
Yes.
So, and there are light ways we can do it. For example, if money is a cost and you don't want to buy two laptops, you can do a VM. You can give them an AVD, right? Right? But the key point is, yes, the machine that access to production should not be the one in which you unintentionally run TikTok or whatever, Tetris, and some malware lands on your computer, and we all get in trouble because of that, right? So it's a separation of hosts, it's very simple, right? But then from there, you also give you obviously strong credentials as well. And then you have to secure your CI/CD pipeline.
Right.
So whenever they make a check-in, first of all, the third-party tools, and then we have like Defender for GitHub or Defender for DevOps, right? To kind of look at all these things all the way up to production. And then once you get to production, Defender for Cloud, right? You know, who's looking at the infrastructure to see, is there a malicious process running in a server in production somehow? And because the bad guys will attack you for all kinds of random reasons. Like, sometimes you'll compromise your compute nodes just to use them to attack his compute nodes.
It is.
It's not even personal at this point. Like, it's not even the products or your data or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. They just need another, you know, more bots in their botnet, right? So a couple of points that kind of came to mind for me there. A lot of what you're saying to me is it also just sounds like general hygiene stuff, right? Take the time to do audits and the governance piece regularly, because I feel like folks forget that this stuff isn't set and forget anymore, right? It hasn't been for a long, long time. If you've got applications in your environment, those applications have a life cycle, and you've got to be able to pick up on those things. And when you audit them, you realize, well, hang on, this app hasn't been used for months.
There's more to that. So when Tarek was talking about Defender for GitHub, it's nice that there's an alert that does something, right?
Right.
But what is the context of that alert and what does it mean?
Right.
And so you've got a SOC analyst who's staring at this alert going, I have an alert. Knows nothing about code repositories, right? And so now, where does that context come from? And we've been working with customers and building SOC teams lately. And one of the things that we've run into is like, all right, so you've got a SOC analyst and they understand about firewalls. Cool, tick. So that alert comes through, they understand about network defense. Then we've got a SOC analyst and they understand about identity. Which identity, right? So, and what identity realm and what product and what products tie to that? That's cool. And then we've got a SOC analyst for endpoints. So now we have SOC analysts that need to understand what
context.
So there's a huge amount of context to actually secure a landscape.
Oh, of course. And the thing, and this leads really well into my second point I was going to make, which is the end user is still the weakest link in this whole thing, right? It doesn't matter.
The human.
Well, exactly, right? And something I sort of often talk about here when I talk to customers about things is the user education, the user training piece, right? I strongly believe that it should be more than just a yearly tick in the box to, you know, for compliance. Like, have you done your InfoSec training? And the InfoSec training is based on 1997, you know, techniques, right? I feel like that should be something that's done regularly and you should be testing your users on this stuff. But there's a difference of opinion, right? In the industry, a lot of folks go, look, we're never going to get the users on this journey. So why bother? Like, let's just secure the environment. But personally, I think you have to, right? They're always going to be the weakest link, but you got to bring them along as best you can. Do you have any thoughts on that? Have you seeing things that work or not, or what do you think?
Curious, what do you think?
I have my own opinion, but go ahead.
I think, like it shouldn't be that like a user clicks one email and like your entire environment like comes down.
Right.
So like you need to do some of that stuff. To your point though, I think like one of the ways to think about this is like good security is good fundamentals, and advanced security is the fundamentals done very, very well. And I think you're going to need to keep, updating your users and teaching them about the things. But like, yeah, this is not their job. That's not their job. Like they don't ask you about what they're doing with this, that, or the other thing, right? I mean, like that's not your job either. So I think you have to make them aware of some of that type of stuff. A story I heard that worked very, very well, and y'all can take this and kind of run with it, but this customer used to have this problem with people tailgating.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for those that don't know what tailgating is, it's like someone badges in, and then Tarek walks in right behind me, and he actually didn't badge in. He just kind of tailgated in on my badge. And this used to happen all the time at this customer. They'd have people come do pen tests and things like that, and they used to kind of always be able to get in every single time. So they made a policy that said, what we're going to do every month is that somebody is going to be trying to tailgate into the environment. And if you catch the person trying to tailgate in behind you, you win what they have in their bag, which is an iPad. Okay? So that's what they said. That's what we're doing. Simple game. We're going to give out 12 iPads. Like, this is what this costs, right? 12 iPads.
Yep.
So the first month, the CIO was the person, and he tried to tailgate into the environment, and somebody said, nope, you need to badge in, and that person won the iPad. And since then, that company has never had a tailgating problem, right? So I think there's lots of creative ways where you don't have to make people go through this, like, very tough training all the time. It's boring.
Yeah.
You know, other ways I've seen customers do this is, hey, this is not just a work thing. Like, this is you should be having MFA on your personal email and your bank account, things like that nature. So I think there's lots of ways to kind of make it more like, this is a generic hygiene thing. Not
life
like
skill,
like,
right?
Yeah, like not a work thing. But I mean, what do you
think? For me, it's an and.
Yeah.
So I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think on the one hand, I think training and so can have some effect. I think better than training is actually just changing the user's expectation. This is where, like, we've been working with the FIDO Alliance. Like, that's what the FIDO Alliance is basically. If you as an end user don't expect a password box, if you see a password box, you'll report it.
Right.
Best case scenario, when we have all the right features in place, the password box, when it comes up, you don't know your password.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, I don't know. Call the help desk. Yeah. Like, they're asking for a password. What was my password?
Yeah.
Right. Why don't I no longer have a password reset button? Well, because we don't use passwords here, sir. Then why are you being asked for a password? Great question.
Yeah.
Let's look into that website, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of that. The vendors, the ecosystem has to make it such that when the user sees an unexpected prompt, because that is the entire basis of phishing, right? The phishing is completely relying on two scientific facts, right? The secret is shared.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, in order for him to prove to me that he has the password, he has to tell me the password in the clear text, and I have to look into a dictionary and say, yep, you got the password, right?
Right.
It's a shared secret. It's not private public key. And then the other one is that it is relies on human cognition. I make a site that looks a lot like Office 365 to you, and you readily give me your OTP or your password or whatever, right? And so the ecosystem itself has to lift itself up.
Mm.
But I also think, like you both said, like, there's some level of training, and I think does go a long way. This is also why we release, for example, my sign-ins, right? My sign-ins should be an integral part of your pitch as a customer, and even a security team to your own users. Like, hey, did you know you can go over there and see all your logins and report the shady ones that weren't you? We introduced it in consumer first because it was highly effective. In fact, when I found out about it, I think Alex Weinert, when he first showed it to us, oh, go to my account, blah, 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 you know, lives.com/activity. And I went to there, and when I got home, I was like, oh, and first of all, discovered how much the thing was working. All these people, like, in Brazil and China were trying to log into it. I had no idea. Just failed.
Yeah.
Right? But I think, so expect having the user own more of their own security is a good thing overall, right? And teaching them that they're a partner in this. But I also think the ecosystem should definitely do more to kind of challenge users' expectations. And that's the problem with the password. This is going to be more secure and easier to use, not just more secure and more cumbersome, which is password plus MFA, right?
Right.
But my customer has that rule that you should not get prompted. Like, if you see a username password box, like, something is wrong,
cool.
Or like, yeah, something's broken somewhere, like, you don't do that.
Mm. And that's
what they're trained.
I like that, because that is a combination of setting the right expectation with the user, like, i.e. training, but also lifting the platform to a point where passwords are not expected or used or needed. Yeah. I really like that. That's a great answer. Thank you.
I want to go back to the workload thing. So on the workload identity stuff specifically, okay, I have a bunch of worker bees running around, and I want to know what the hell's going on there. There is an improvement coming on our side. So one of the things we've been doing, people struggle with, is we do have guidance on, okay, look at your graph permissions, look at your permissions that you consented to for apps, and graph or non-graph, right?
Yeah.
You're using Entra for your authentication service, issuing access token to worker bees. What permissions did they ask for, right? Mm-hmm. We have guidance, and as he mentioned, Defender for Apps actually now has like as a basic categorization, like this is red, this is yellow, this is green. This is really, really dangerous. This is, and so you could, if you're overwhelmed, you can just simply, I'll review the red once a quarter and ask them, do you still need this? Why do you need this? Fill a justification, right? I think the good news is coming from us at some point, hopefully this year. I don't want to make promises, but you'll see from us now some kind of reporting on effective permissions used versus actually asked for.
Mm.
So now you can say, I have a different conversation. Okay, you asked me for six. You told me I'm the blah, blah, blah app. I don't know who you are. And I said, I need all these. And now I see only calling three of the six.
Mm.
Can I take over the other three? I'm going to question you, the three you're calling.
Yeah.
Can I take over the other? I think that's because I think that will significantly help people also trace out. Because a lot of times, our dear friend, the developers, they just, for example, they maybe have copied the consent of another app.
Yeah.
Nobody, of course, uses Stack Overflow, right? Stack Overflow or GitHub, right? And or the sample they copy from GitHub, right? It's a consent asking for five scopes, and so they ask for five scopes. But effectively, when they're running, they're only using two, right?
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah. And it's there's two things, right? It's just either that scaffolding concept of like, we'll use something that worked well before, even though it may not be doing the same thing. And two, it's the tyranny of the default, right? Yes. We've got this document that says, you know, here's how you apply for app permissions, and it's got three examples in it. Well, we'll just copy and paste that and use those three examples.
Fair point. Yeah. We actually made a recent improvement in the graph doc specifically about that. Actually, yeah. We used to say to call, for example, to read the, user.title, you could use user.read in delegated read as user, or you could use user.readAll, or you could use user.readWriteAll. And then the three were listed next to each other, and the developer was like, oh, let me take that one. That looks good.
Yeah.
Right? That's terrifying.
I might want to write at some point. Why wouldn't I use that?
No, but like, yeah, so it's not least privileged. So now we actually call out which one is the least privileged.
Yeah.
So you got to say, okay, if you're trying to be a secure developer, use the right one, right? Help you guide you. They're not equal. The three is not equal.
Yeah. Slightly off the cuff question, but I'd love to get your take on this. And I'm sure everyone listening is really interested. Is it Entra or Entra?
So I know the answer to this. So it is Entra like magenta. That's the way you can.
Okay.
How is magenta and Entra, right? They don't rhyme together.
Entra like magenta.
Well, bottom line is people who say Entra, they think it's French. It's not French. It's actually Spanish.
Okay.
Entra is the word in Spanish. Enter.
Okay.
It's to enter. It's the verb to enter. And so we're actually like the origin of it. So.
Well, I'm glad we could set the record straight on that one because I've been getting
no
confused.
French in it.
Yeah, no French.
Entree, nothing to do, you know, entering or food.
Sans entree.
Yes. So it's entree.
Meryl did say it was about entrance.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to message you, but you forgot to explain that it's a Spanish verb. But I said.
So that was a great episode that we did with Meryl. And something that our listeners loved from that show was tools, 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 tools.
Mm-hmm.
Graph, X-ray, look what's actually happening, right? And what we are finding is maybe a demystifying of what's in the box. Because Entra, there's a lot in the box, right? And especially if we come back to the application governance landscape, how do I know what's in the box? It's very complicated. Developers don't understand it. Our Entra ID administrators don't understand what an app does necessarily. There's many different types of apps and apps registrations, and it gets really mysterious really quickly. What have you got for our listeners to help to demystify what's in the box?
So you're asking what are the different features and things that they have that they're not using? That the main ask, or you're asking about like, I want to learn more about app registration.
Maybe less known tools and tricks.
And you mentioned scripts, right? We love scripts.
Love scripts. Love scripts. We have the cloud app script off. We'll have to get it to you. It's been a minute since we've looked at that one. And then that goes along with that talk, which is explains like what is app registrations versus a service principal and the service principal. So we can link out to that. Like the workbooks, right? The KQL workbooks.
I was going to say, so one of the things, at least, if you are a customer of Azure, you have log analytics enabled, Azure monitoring enabled, right? One of the buried treasures of Entra is the actual workbooks in general. If you go to the workbooks tab, of course, you have to have an Azure subscription, you have to have enabled log integration, right? this has a lot of variable insights, CA coverage, all the stuff, and a lot of my customers don't know about it, even though they may have actually have Azure and everything.
Yeah.
Then I think if I was even take a step back and say, most of our customers don't even enable logging enough with integration with Azure, and you need it to use for retention, right? If you want logs more than 30 days, it helps you to build all these amazing insights. And Mark's upcoming book is going to appear. We should talk about his book. But basically, it will help you start querying across different data sets, for example. That kind of stuff, it's important to be able to say, okay, I find all the risky users, and then find me, you know, the activity, the devices that are coming from, that kind of stuff. And I think maybe that's an over point. We can talk about it when we get to his, it's more like the skill set that you need to be a modern admin in a modern, you know, in an enterprise-based tenant versus what you used to be able to do.
That's right.
With event log or whatever you were doing there. Right?
Yes.
And I think that's an important thing. But I think in terms of tools, I think there's something, I'll say it now. I don't know when we're going to go live, but hopefully by the time we do go live, it is a big deal.
Braver than me.
We do have, Merrill actually works on it, specifically our lead developer on it, right?
Oh.
Is, and I actually don't think he mentioned the episode, but I don't know if he did. I didn't watch it finish to the end. aka.ms/ztassess, right? Which is a zero trust assessment that we were developing, where it's coming actually from the customer engineering team from, and we've partnered with all the, actually several of the other customer engineering teams within that. So right now in this building, we have devices, the second floor or first floor, we have security. And so we've basically, if you go to that website, it's actually gonna, there's a guidance and explanation, but you can actually sign in. Mm-hmm. It's gonna ask for a graph consent to read on your behalf as an admin. And it will give you an assessment of your tenant. It will actually show you, this is an actual internal tool we have that we've been using in CXE. And we're now basically having, it's actually been published also on GitHub for a few years. But it's now put in the form of a multi-tenant app.
Okay.
So another new gets it, it actually gives you an assessment, gives you a CSV, the basic CSV, because you want it to be such that I can take it to a customer, you can take it to a customer. Like I didn't want to have like an internal Microsoft Power BI or whatever dashboard. And so we are adding more and more to it. So we have identity. It does a full assessment of identity posture. It does a full assessment of your device's posture as well. And then we're adding data as well. So purview overlap, a lot of the DLP stuff, how you're using it, not using it, how are you using it, that kind of stuff. And then the first three tabs is the Zero Trust Workshop, which we've been partnering and we're talking about. And so that's one of those. Yeah, I think by the time you're publishing this episode, we will have actually, it's already live right now, but I'm thinking we're adding more to it. So by the time you publish, and if you want to ping me, I can confirm to you, but it should be up and running by the time you guys have it. It's really good tool.
We'll grab that URL off you, and I'm very interested, Mark, to hear about
the book. Yes. Tell us about the book.
All right. So first, let's talk about, so KQL, to kind of Tarek's point, is really like a fundamental skill that you have to have today.
What is KQL?
KQL is called Kusto Query Language, and it's you pretty much really like it's it'd be equivalent to like, hey, I don't really know PowerShell, but I have to manage all this stuff on. I'm like, you really gotta learn that, right? So what we did, so myself, Rod Trent, who is much better at KQL than myself, and Matthew Zorich, who is much better at KQL than myself, and Chris Cupmans was our technical reviewer, who is also much better at KQL than myself. We put together, it's called The Definite Guide to KQL, and it really is focused on a couple of things. First, if you have never looked at KQL before, it will get you kind of started, like what are the basic commands you need to run, like how does this all kind of work together? Then we have some of the more advanced stuff that kind of Tarek was mentioning, like how do you do joining of multiple different data tables and things like that together. And then towards the end, we have like, hey, how do you do this with like threat hunting and some of those types of security controls? Like, how does the Dart team actually do this? So in there, we have a bunch of commands or a bunch of KQL queries for you that you can run. The other thing we did was we actually reached out to different PMs in the Microsoft organization, say, hey, what are some of the KQL queries that you use with your customers? And we got those included into the book as well. Like, hey, this is what we use to look for dynamic group processing and just all kinds of different operational things as well. And then all of the KQL queries will be up on the GitHub repo, like they're already there today. So the book should be out in early June. So all the queries will be available. Anyone can get the queries. But if you actually want to understand like the context of like, why do you maybe use has versus contains? Like there's reasons for that. And there's performance reasons why you'd want to do that. So that's all kind of covered in the book as well. So
very cool.
Yeah. Feel free to take a look at that.
What's the, how can people get it when it comes out? What's the sort of format? And
so it's, It'll be on Amazon and Microsoft Press Store.
Okay.
Digital copies as well, and cool. Things like that. So if you go to the Microsoft Press Store and use, I think the coupon code is CUSTO, you'll get 30% off. So that's coming out of Matt's, like what he gets paid. So we said that was okay. So Matt doesn't get paid if you use the CUSTO purse.
Fantastic.
I think something I want to add here is that besides, you know, promoting my buddy Mark's book, is that learning CUSTO specifically is like a life essential skill at this point. Like, cannot be an effective admin in the cloud, at least on Microsoft stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without you need it for operations, just putting aside identity and security, just for just to be able to figure out, be able to quickly examine your logs. It is the kind of like, and it's a super efficient thing, which is kind of the modernization and that sort of SQL and all the other stuff. Instead of having to put all this data, it's really super fast, right? You can look at a massive data sets really quickly and summarize them for you, really nice. And then Log Analytics has the ability to get dashboard and all this other cool stuff on top of it, right?
Mm.
And so I think it's just a life skill. I have advice for your audience. It's just, if you don't know CUSTO and you're anywhere near the Microsoft stack, you should really learn CUSTO. And then in SecOps, it's also important. Like, this is where the book, I think, comes in, is we start kind of looking at them in the context of, can I look at stuff in identity? Can I look at stuff in devices? Can I look at stuff in identity and devices?
That's a very
unexpected tidbit, but very, very, yeah.
Then we get back to that theme of adulthood again.
Full circle on the episode, as we like it.
Yeah,
very cool.
I'm very sad to say we're coming up to the top of the hour.
Yes. Apart from the book, and I mean, you've given us a lot of sort of good takeaways, and we'll get all of this stuff into the show notes. Is there anything else you'd kind of like to share or plug with the audience and the folks? And hopefully we don't leave it another 5 years before we catch up with you all again.
Back by popular demand, right?
We'll go to South Africa next time. That's cool. From my side, Passkeys. Right? So Passkeys are coming to Entra soonish. Hopefully by the time you maybe even have your podcast. So. And passkeys are basically the kind of the remedy, right, for mobile, right? Now users on mobile can get the same beautiful phishing resistant passwordless experience. And the authenticator app at that point will become phishing resistant as well. So it will, if you are on a passkey capable phone, the authenticator app will use passkeys, and you won't have to worry about, even with the, you know, phone signing, I can still send you say, enter 66 in the thing I just sent, and rely on the user's generosity to resist phishing.
Cool.
So passkeys is going to be a big thing. Obviously, initially, the ecosystem is going to be a little bit, they work on iOS this version only, Android that version only, blah, blah, blah.
Hmm.
But over time, I think the same pitch I made 5 years ago for passwordless, this time it's passkey. Passkey is going to be think of it as the unlocking of the passwordless ecosystem to the masses. It's a good thing.
Very cool.
I'll say more of like a mindset thing. And I think sometimes one of the things that customers run into is, oh, well, we want to do this thing, but I don't know how to do it for this subset of users. So we don't do anything.
Yes.
10% better is better than 0%. 30% is better than 10%. Like, you have to make these incremental improvements and continue to drive that. And like, it's sometimes it's really hard to see that day to day. But when you approach things that way, in 6 months, 9 months, a year, you've made a tremendous amount of progress in your environment, and you've greatly improved your security posture. Mm. So I would tell, you know, keep that in mind. Like, look at your conditional access policies. Look at who is not in scope of policies. Maybe what resources are not in scope to policies. Have we like made a choice many, many years ago? Like, for example, like I use a Mac. Things didn't work that well in that space maybe 4 years ago. So we just excluded all those users from the policies. Mm. Been a lot of improvements in that space. You can now start to bring these people into those conditional access policies, right? So lots of stuff like that. I would really say, like, you know, see where you can make those small gains, because over time they add up, they make a humongous difference.
Don't start somewhere, don't do nothing. It's actually quite funny, because I think the quote you left us with last time was, there is no choice of doing nothing and staying secure, right? Yes. You have to do something. Great way to sort of cap it off for us, I think, and for the audience.
Yeah. So I do agree it's going to be less than 5 years before we see this review again. And every time we do speak to you, we get tremendous amount of value that actually carries us for years, in fact. And so thank you to both of you for your time and for investing into our listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Okay.
Let's do it again.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Hey, everyone. Before you go, we just wanted to say thank you for listening. We really enjoy putting this podcast together for you every 2 weeks. Please visit us at thearchitects.cloud or alternatively drop us a tweet. We'd love to hear what you have to say. @thecloudarc.